the lane. Crosses up Van Hula. Okie doke move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No, it's good.
She got it.
Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds, and a very spooky one at that, as it is coming up on Halloween weekend. I think the only thing scarier than Halloween is Tom Brady's love life on this Thursday afternoon, as we just heard some stories out of that camp. But we're getting on to football a little bit later. But first, I'm Mikey Frinelli, alongside producer David Moses and co-host Dane Dreyfuss. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, considering the fact that the Packers and Bears are tied in the standings. Like, I thought I'd be much worse for wear, and here I am, still alive.
David, what about you?
I'm doing really good, especially after Monday's victorious win over
yep.
the New England Patriots. And then being back on the Red Zone, I just feel great to be back.
Yeah, good to see David back and healthy here in studio. A little bit rundown of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to do a little bit of Redbirds first. We'll then get into the Bears specifically, because we've talked a lot about football, but we haven't had a Bears segment in a while. Then at 6:30, we'll have Kason Shingothi of News and Sports join. He was the lucky winner of our World Series bracket challenge for the News and Sports department, so he's going to come on and tell us about the Phillies and Astros. And then finally, we'll round it out with some pick six picks. But first, let's talk Redbirds, and I think we should start with Redbirds soccer. 3-14-1 on the season ending last weekend. And the last game of the season, though, a 4-2 win, and they had two players honored. They had Allison Baker, MVC Offensive Player of the Week, and Hillary Griffin, MVC Freshman of the Week. So the future is bright, but that said, not a great start for Marissa Kresge and her first year as a Redbirds head coach.
I mean, we could keep it with the spooky theme, and we're kind of eulogizing them right now, to be honest.
Basically, yeah.
I mean, not a lot to get excited about this season. I mean, the future is always something to look forward to, but they weren't a very young team. If you look at some of their top scorers, like, you have Allison Baker, who is a senior, Catherine Felton, who is also a senior. But if I'm not mistaken, they do have a couple of younger players that are coming through the ranks in Kelsey McLaughlin, who had a pretty good season. But overall, it was just not great for the Redbirds soccer team.
But, you know, you said it right there. They don't have a lot of young players. And these types of things happen when, you know, new leadership comes into a program and they struggle to find direction. You know, when talking about finding proper direction, it starts with enforcement of whoever the head coach is. You know, that's a prime example. The prime example is head coach Allie Matters of the volleyball team. Mm-hmm. She has a lot of young players that she wants to build a foundation with, and she has done that to the season. And I'm not saying that, you know, this season for the volleyball team, and I don't mean to go off, you know, on a tangent about the volleyball team, but I don't mean to say that everything has been perfect for this volleyball team, but it seems like they have direction that this soccer team just doesn't really have right now. But, you know, that shouldn't be too alarming. This is a new system, a new coaching staff coming in. So I think that they'll realize that this season was very ugly. It's something that they don't want to repeat, and they'll have to make adjustments this offseason.
So they started 0-6 and then got two wins to end their out-of-conference season back in early September. That was Lindenwood and Western Illinois. But those two wins would be two of three they'd have all season, as they ended up going on a long losing streak to start the Missouri Valley Conference season, only having it broken by a draw against Valpo on October 6th, and then finally a win versus Missouri State. That one was at home. I believe all their wins were at home. No, there was one road win at Western Illinois, which ISU always makes quick work of Western Illinois when we go visit there. The baseball team did the same thing last year.
I mean, you can't teach goal scoring, and they only had two games where they had over three goals. And I know soccer is not a high-scoring sport, but it was kind of alarming how many times they were shut out, in my opinion. And you can't teach goal scoring. Like, that's something you need to recruit.
Well, they were flipping through goaltenders all year, if I remember correctly. There was two goaltenders they were kind of screwing with, meaning like they were screwing with the lineup, I should say. And it seems like at that point, you got to stay confident with one.
Oh, yeah,
because sure. I feel like, and maybe this transcends just soccer, but if you know you're the guy, if you know you're the person, then, you know, that adds an extra layer of confidence.
But like you were saying, up until that Valparaiso tie, from the stretch of September 18th to October 6th, there was 7 games played, not one Redbird goal.
You took the note right out my computer here. That is something that is not acceptable at all. You go basically almost a good 3 weeks without scoring a goal. Two weeks, excuse me.
And it's hard to, like... Like, as a hockey player, I know, like, my narrative was, like, you're gripping the stick a little tighter. Like, everything's going wrong. You're missing stuff that you're not used to missing. It's the little... You change up the little things in your routine, and it's just brutal. You just feel like you're never going to score again.
You know, soccer is one of those sports. You cannot solely depend on defense to carry you through a season. Eventually, you're going to have to put that ball through the net, and that's just something that they struggled immensely to do over the course of this year.
I mean, in looking at those games, too, the stretch that they really struggled, if they score one goal against Valparaiso, you win. You score one goal against Belmont, you tie. You score one goal against Indiana State. Like, and I'm not saying that changes the narrative of your season, but it's like, man, it makes the record a lot more swallowable, and it makes your team look a lot more competitive.
Well, I remember Krejci said a couple times throughout the season that it's just a matter of making things a little bit sharper, making the right adjustments. And I think maybe in her first year, it just felt like those things just didn't click. And I think, like you were talking about with Allie Matters and the volleyball team, I think naturally it does take a new coach some time to start to coach a team well. I mean, it's no surprise why Melinda Fisher, who was with the softball team for 30-something years, was so amazing at what she did towards the end, because you know the program. You know what talented players who are coming into town. And then you see them win against Missouri State, who was 7-2-1 on the season and tied for the top of the Missouri Valley. So... And ISU, obviously, in last, it won an 8-1 in conference. So it's interesting to see them win against a tough team late in the season. I guess that's a positive.
But, you know, it's definitely a positive. But one of the reasons I think that translated to some of the poor production on the offensive side, it all goes down to just fundamentals. And it didn't seem like this soccer team had a lot of that. And I don't want to be too harsh on them, just knowing the circumstances that they had to endure this season with the new coaching staff and just a new regime as a whole, but it didn't seem like they had too many, maybe fundamentals weren't really emphasized over the course of the year as they should have been, which is why we saw a lack of production on the offensive side.
Well, I think we should move on and probably start talking about a little bit more of a winning program, raise the mood a little bit. It's a big week for Redbird football, probably the biggest of the year, if I'm not mistaken.
5 of the last 6 games, it's a win, 3 in a row, and the team that has a chance to stop them is a bunch of bison. Number 4, North Dakota State.
I think it's pronounced Bison.
Bison, my bad.
Bison.
I think it's pronounced Carson Wentz. No.
It's pronounced Carson Wentz, Trey Lance Christian Watson.
But number 4, North Dakota State, in Fargo next week, this weekend, I should say. That is maybe going to be a humbling experience, I would say, for the ISU team. But I think there is positives, and as we talked about on the show last week, 3-2 in the last 5 games, which we already beat Indiana State this past weekend, so now it's 2-2. So 2-2 in the last 4 games still more than likely puts them in the playoffs at 7 wins. So if you can somehow find a way to upset North Dakota State or South Dakota State at some point, that's crazy. That's going to be interesting.
My dad's sitting here, too, as a Western Illinois alum, being like, hey, what about Western?
You're at the point of the season where every win counts, especially for your Illinois State, and what a way to... kind of make your chances into the FCS playoff field a little bit easier with a win here. It's going to be a tough one, probably one of their bigger challenges of the year, you know, not including Wisconsin. But I don't know. Anything could happen. You've seen this team, like you said, they won 5 out of the last 6 games. They're riding high off momentum, and sometimes momentum can just do the job for you.
That's facts. And then also, too, I mean, I was a believer, like, I was getting really pumped for this game in the first half against Indiana State, where it really found like they were finding their identity on offense. Zach Anikstad accounted for 3 touchdowns in the first half, and then the offense just sort of went anemic and let Indiana State back in the game. You only beat a team by 7 points that you were up 20 going into the half. It was very concerning.
I would argue that NDSU is not the best team in the Missouri Valley Football Conference here, though. It's got to be the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. only losing one game in the season so far at Iowa. Of course, that was the classic 7-3 week two game that was all over social media. And since then, haven't lost, 5-0 in conference, including a win against North Dakota State, 23-21, North Dakota State's only in-conference loss.
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be very crucial that the Redbirds remain disciplined, not just on offense, but on defense as well. You're starting to get into the later parts of the year. It gets cold. Those hamstrings get tight. It gets harder to tackle. Those helmets are a little bit harder. You're going to need to stay disciplined on defense, especially against these talented teams who like to run the ball, pass the ball. Secondary production as a whole for this Redbird team should be emphasized by head coach Brock Speck, and I have no doubt that it will be. When you flip the ball over to the offensive side of the ball, it's really the same things that we've been talking about all year. Running the ball has to be a key factor and a point of emphasis for this team if they're going to want to show some, you know, life in these later parts of the year.
Defense has been the identity of this football team all season, and they're probably going to play the two most dynamic offenses they're going to play since they played Wisconsin week one. Mm-hmm. You want to see how they're going to respond to that. I think turnovers are just going to be the story of the game, because if you turn the ball over on offense, you need to keep your defense on the field, need to keep them well rested. And if the defense can put the ball back in Zach Anixtad's hands and then get Winkers right going, the Redbirds, I think, can steal one of those games, which is crucial if they want to make an FCS playoff push.
Which, I mean, you talked about turnovers. That's been an easy thing for the Redbirds to come by this year. And not just turnovers, but scoring on those turnovers. I would love to see linebacker Zeke Vandenberg, you know, get a little bit more. Yeah, he kind of cooled down after firing out the gates for the first few weeks of the season.
He won three different MVC player, the defensive players of the week early on. I mean,
you want to see just a little bit more from him, especially in these important games, which I have no doubt that he can show up. It's going to be fun to watch how this team unfolds in the next few weeks against some pretty good competition.
And almost an unfair travel schedule. ISU will be back they'll be in Fargo, then they'll be back in Normal, then they'll be in South Dakota, and then they'll be back in Normal. So they have to go just back and forth a couple times. But I mean, it's good to sprinkle in those home games. You don't necessarily want three away games in a row, and that's what it would have been if they had them. And either way, they would have had to come back home anyway. It's not like the pros. So,
you know, those road wins just hit a little bit different. I don't know mm-hmm. what it is. Winning on the road gives you such a sense of, oh, we came into your house, you know, we got the job done, now we're going back home. Let's go get another win on our home field and then go do it again on the road the next week. So hopefully the momentum stays with the Redbirds. We'll see how it unfolds. And, yeah.
Their rushing attack for North Dakota State has been most of their offense. They have just absolutely scored the ball by the way of the run, having over 20 touchdowns with a lot of different players getting to touch the ball. Hunter Lepke, I believe, has 8 touchdowns on the year and over 500 yards rushing. They only have 8 passing touchdowns from Cam Miller, who has been their starting quarterback, and it doesn't really seem like he turns the ball over that much.
But, you know, having called about 2 to 3, I can't even remember, 2 or 3 games for the Redbirds this year, one of the things that I've noticed a lot is that they do not get fooled easily. They're very sound and disciplined defense, and even though you might throw a misdirection or some type of trick run play coming across, you know, the line, they will respond well to that and they'll react pretty fast, and it usually causes for a negative yardage on the offense. So hopefully they'll be able to respond well to this rushing attack.
To round out the Redbird recap segment, let's talk a little bit about Redbird volleyball. I know we alluded to it a little bit earlier, but they are 3-8 in conference right now. Got their third conference win over the weekend, their first time ever visiting Belmont as a conference opponent. They swept them, but then lost on Saturday to round out the weekend. So the Redbirds, who are 4-3 at home, now have their next 4 matches at home. And it could be a chance to maybe get things a little bit interesting before the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. Obviously, they are not a one-seeded team, but they're not exactly out of it yet either, if they can go on a nice streak here.
This is a team that plays with so much passion. I wouldn't be surprised if things got a little close here towards, you know, the end of the season.
Nothing gets you right like a little home cooking. That's what I like to say.
Well, and it's interesting because they're going to be home this weekend against Missouri State and Southern, and then they're going to be home next weekend against UNI and Drake, then back on the road, UIC and Valpo, and then home to end the season in RBA against Bradley, the rival, who they lost to earlier in the season, but I don't think has done very well either this season. So if it comes down somehow to that Wednesday night game, November 16th, could be really nice to see them get a home win to clinch a tournament spot, because those are not every team makes a tournament.
I'm excited for that press conference. I am working press for that game, so a lot of questions will be had.
So looking forward at the rest of their schedule, the MVC tournament, if they do make it, would be November 20th through November 23rd. That's a couple days before Thanksgiving. That would be in Evansville. Guys, if this team goes in a tear and actually finds a way into that tournament, what do you think could happen come that tournament?
Like I said, momentum changes a lot about a game in general. If you come in and you have the confidence, you have the wins behind your back from previous weeks, who knows? Anything could happen.
He's right. Anything can happen, and anything can happen, so we're going to send it to a commercial. How about that? You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
I'm Dan Muller, basketball coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, and you're listening to The Red Zone only on 103.3 WZND.
103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mikey Frinelli, David Moses, Dane Dreyfus here from the ZND studio. You're listening to The Red Zone. And guys, we are in a strange spot in the Bears cycle right now. The Bears have a cycle, don't they, David? You lose, you're like, oh, I'm not watching this team again, and then they get a win they probably shouldn't, usually by a big number, and then all of a sudden the hype train's going again.
I tell everyone who I get into talks about the Bears, they send you on one of the craziest roller coaster rides of emotions every single week. Every week you have a chance to win, but you end up losing in the fourth quarter. Every week you're winning up until the fourth quarter, and the team comes back and you win a close game. It's so much that goes on with the Chicago Bears team.
That's why I've said all year that there's no way they lose anymore, or there's no way they don't win at least six or seven games, because that's how the Bears are. They're never going to have a team on the field that's an 0-16 Browns team. They always have enough money to put together a decent team, but not good enough to be good.
Let's just remember this. Matt Nagy went to the playoffs twice with Mitchell Trubisky. If that's not a full example of the Chicago Bears football of the past few years, I don't know what is. But, you know, talking about the Bears in general, we got some big news yesterday. Robert Quinn traded to the Eagles for a fourth-round draft pick. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, Robert Quinn, like, to get any assets for a 37-year-old pass rusher when you know you're not going to be a playoff team, which Adam Rank, the Bears insider on NFL Network, would probably argue that this team has the moxie to do so. I don't see it. I also don't personally see it for my Packers right now. But honestly, I think it's a good move. The team is finding their identity on offense, which is a scary thing to say as a Packer fan. But honestly, like, it's on the up and up in Chicago. And at some point, the Bears and Packers, they might already be there, but they're meeting at the middle because the Bears are on the up and up and the Packers are on a steep decline.
And you said it right there, they're meeting at the middle, but come this offseason, I don't know. The Bears are projected to have $134 million in salary cap. That tops the league in projections this offseason. And that's going to give Ryan Poles, the general manager of the Bears, a lot of wiggle room to be able to go out and grab some big names.
And a lot of responsibility, too.
But he's not really attached to anyone. And that's, I think, a good thing. He doesn't, you know, there's very few players in this roster that he picked, handpicked. If you're a pace era player and you're not showing up, I'm sorry. Poles might find a way to spend more money and replace you. And that includes Justin Fields. I was impressed with what I saw last week against the Patriots. I think a lot of fans were. But if he doesn't string it together, all of a sudden you can think about a quarterback heavy draft class and Poles considering it.
Pace was interviewed before the Patriots game and asked about the performance of Justin Fields. And they asked how the front office was evaluating him. He did not say Justin Fields' job was safe, but he did not say that they were looking and exploring at other options at the quarterback
position. I wouldn't expect him to say anything. Neither. Yeah.
Can I have a second to be a little bit of a Packer curmudgeon about the Bears game?
Oh, go ahead.
I like the smile on your face. You're like, try and rain on my parade, please. But overall, like, I think that was a really good game for the Bears, and it could have gone south after those 14 points unanswered scored by the Patriots. Mm-hmm. But I think I don't want to say that the Bears didn't win the game, because I believe they did, but I think the Patriots also lost it themselves. Mac Jones shouldn't have started that game. No. That should have been Bailey Zappe in, and it's a more throw-heavy offense when Bailey Zappe plays, and he didn't get first-team reps. When he was asked after the game, did you practice with the first team, and why didn't you if you didn't? And he almost didn't answer in the Patriot way, and he went, that's a question for... It doesn't matter. I should have been prepared either way.
He would have been dropped if he said Bill. There's no way.
Well, maybe not Bill, maybe a Matt Patricia, but it honestly, it looked like the offense was prepared for a Mac Jones night, and they had to go with a Zappe night, and
the Bears defense just ate him up. I mean, it's like hitting up a tee. Like it was like, oh, I know that we should be eating this guy up, but it still felt good.
Shout out my best friend Matthew Schlifke, who is a diehard Bears fan, so our relationship is very complicated. He told me when they drafted Jaquan Brisker, this kid is a stud. And he just looks like an absolute freak on the field. What is he, like 6'4"? He looks mm-hmm. like Calvin Johnson playing defensive back.
You knew that he was going to be special because when he was drafted and you see the tape run, he reminds you of someone that the Bears had a few years ago in Adrian Amos. He's a hard hitter. He flies down the field. He can go sideline to sideline. And we saw on Monday that he's pretty athletic. He can go up there and make that catch and put it on a highlight reel. So it works with both of these rookies. I think that there's arguments out there that could say, oh, the Bears should have went 43 and took George Pickens over Kyler Gordon. Kyler Gordon is coming in his own way, playing that slot position, which he's never played before. I think these two rookies are steals out of the draft. I think they are setting a great foundation on the defensive side. Hopefully it can translate on offense as well for the Bears.
David Moses, I have a question.
What's up?
As I would say you're a resident Bears expert. I'm a resident Bears homer. I just always pick the Bears. But David is a resident Bears expert. Who is the number one target on the Bears offense right now? What do you think?
Equanimeous St. Brown. Either Equanimeous St. Brown or Dante Pettis. I'm sorry, but it just hasn't really been there for Darnell Mooney. He's had some great highlights, some great catches over the year, over the course of the year, and I'm sure that him and Justin Fields have been working all offseason to try to prep and adjust to the new attention that Darnell has been getting. But if we're being honest, one of the number one targets who I think is leading the team in touchdown receptions is Dante Pettis.
Yeah.
It's his first year with the Bears. I mean,
well, you said it there. You said he's receiving extra attention. But if he's going to be a wide receiver one, like some people have said he would be, it's not like the defense is going to get any easier, especially against the Cowboys or anyone coming up who's going to have a great secondary on you. You need to be able to get through that if you're Darnell Mooney.
I know you're probably talking more particularly about the receiving core, but for a guy that you need to get involved in the Bears offense, Khalil Herbert has been probably your most dynamic player on offense, and I'm probably shooting myself in the foot here as David Moses has Khalil Herbert in my fantasy football league as I'm trying to acquire him, but they need to get him more touches, especially in the open field as well.
It's not – I've been saying this all year ever since David Montgomery went down with the first injury he had this year with the leg injury. It's not looking good for him as he's on a contract year. I know that he's one of the – toughest runners, he can break a tackle and get as many yards as he can after contact. But the production that we've seen from Khalil Herbert this year so far, all signs are pointing towards him being RB1 next year, and maybe Ryan Poles saving up some money and not re-signing David Montgomery.
Well, the thing is, too, why aren't Bears fans talking about, like, let's move David Montgomery? It's been a running back heavy market. There are teams that are certainly not happy with their situation, a la the Los Angeles Rams with Cam Akers. You have a disgruntled Cam Akers who wants out. I mean, I don't think the Bears necessarily need to take a flyer on Cam Akers, but I think Montgomery probably fits more of what McVay would want to do because Montgomery does have the pass catching chops. But get some assets for him, save some money, roll with Khalil Herbert, get him more touches. I think the Bears should be having a fire sale right now, and you don't have to sell the players that have been successful for you is the thing. Like, honestly, you can probably even get pretty good capital for a Darnell Mooney. And I know that's crazy, but there's a lot of teams that need receivers right now that would probably pay a pretty penny, as in like a second or third round pick for a guy that you only have a fourth round draft capital invested in.
Is Darnell Mooney enough, though, to have somebody give up enough? Because, I mean, I was already a little bit upset about Robert Quinn, not because I didn't think they got enough, but because the market just wasn't there.
But you knew no matter what
that the Bears would have to eat that cap space. So you're seeing a fourth-round draft pick. So think about if it was Darnell Mooney. I think fans would be very upset if they did a similar trade for Darnell Mooney.
And I'm not an advocate for a Darnell Mooney trade at all. I think that he is a long-term piece. There are mutual interests between Ryan Poles and Darnell Mooney. They want to get an extension done soon. But I'm going to go back to the question you asked earlier that wasn't really addressed. Darnell Mooney, I'm just going to be real, is not a wide receiver one.
Mm-mm.
I look at a wide receiver one as a big guy, a jump ball guy. He's going to be in the red zone. We had that last year with Allen Robinson, but contract issues, I think, got in the way of.
We kind of had it. He was there. He wasn't really doing much. His last year, he wasn't trying, but it got
in the way of his production. Maybe that was some of him. Maybe it was some of the coaching scheme. But I look at wide receiver one position as a jump ball big guy, and that's just something Darnell Mooney has proven not to be.
Well, I wouldn't say, so he's not really, he doesn't high point the ball that well, but he does make some phenomenal diving catches. Personally, but I wasn't necessarily saying like trade Mooney for just draft capital. the wide receiver market has been a big talk. I mean, you're telling me that the Bears wouldn't look to possibly offload a Darnell Mooney and maybe get like a Chase Claypool in return, a DJ Moore, some guys that could use a change of scenery and could probably
Elijah Moore?
What's that?
Elijah Moore.
Elijah Moore. See, but like you said, you like your big bodies, guys that have the ceiling of a number one. Elijah Moore, I think, caps out as a really good slot receiver in the NFL, which I think is probably what Darnell Mooney is too. He can line up outside though. But like, if you can go get a DJ Moore or a Chase Claypool for pennies on the dollar, I don't know why the Bears wouldn't take a stab at it.
I would assume that in-house, the Bears management has decided whether or not they're trying to compete. And that's the problem, because no one really knows. So you don't know if it'd be smart to do something like that, because you'd be trading possible development for somewhat experience, maybe a year or two of a Chase Claypool. And so that's the problem. Even if the Bears trade for a more established younger or young-ish receiver, what, you get 2 years of it and it's just the same stuff in 3 years? I mean, I don't know. For me, I still think we should let Darnell Mooney carry out this year, see how it goes, and see what we can do about an extension.
But what I'm saying, though, is in regards to like going after, like, you're going after a ceiling player that is underperformed, so you're probably going to end up re-signing them if you trade for them. Not to mention, too, there's guys out there like T. Higgins who, like, there's a lot of guys in their fourth year of deals that teams aren't going to be able to re-sign. But it's also another good – it's another excellent wide receiver class with Smith and Ajiba and
– But I just heard he was having kind of an underwhelming year.
There's just too many mouths to feed on that Ohio State offense. But that's a story for another day. But all I'm saying is I think that you're not necessarily foregoing draft capital, and I don't think you – it could be a one-for-one swap. You're probably going to have to pay a little bit more money, but – you're taking a flyer on a guy who's underperformed, and that might just be the Blackhawks fan in me that's like, oh, let's have the Bears go get a reclamation project, which is honestly what Claypool would be, but you can't tell me he doesn't have the intangibles and the makings of a number one receiver, and DJ Moore is that guy.
What's your favorite Blackhawks reclamation project in recent years?
They're so...
I'm putting you guys on the spot today, but I love these terms, so I had to think about it.
I'm going to... Dylan Strome is a soft spot for me because he was in one of the greatest draft classes of all time in hockey, and the Blackhawks for a second made him look like he was worth that like third overall pick, mm-hmm. and then he just never filled out as a player.
I saw a hat trick there one time when Dylan Strome was the guy for that one, and it was a Irish hat giveaway night, and so it was St. Patrick's Day. So then when he got the hat trick, they could have done the giveaway again because every hat was on the ice. They could have just picked him up.
Well, I also needed to say this too, and I know we're all over the place
right
now.
We're off topic, but I had to tell that story.
It was a perfect non-segue, because I needed to ask you guys if, obviously, you watched the Bears-Patriots game, but I had to ask, did you guys see on Twitter the next day that the Skycam might have played a factor into that Mac Jones interception?
No, what was the story behind this?
So the story behind it is I was watching on Twitter, and you could see one of like the strings of the Skycam, and it looks like it possibly changes the trajectory of the Mac Jones pass. It might be more of a conspiracy theory at that point, but we might be seeing some changes there where, and honestly, I don't think it had any impact on the game whatsoever because Bailey Zappe was put in and they scored 14 unanswered points. But I just thought it was something that was really, really interesting, especially for a primetime game.
It's interesting that we don't hear about that more often, but I just looked it up on Twitter and you were completely right. It looks like the ball did deflect off it just a little bit. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have Kason Shingothi on, and we're going to be talking about the Fall Classic. That's right. It's going to be the Phillies. It's going to be the Astros. It starts tomorrow. We'll give you a quick preview. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Kason Shingothi is one of our newest hires here for the news and sports team, but he got to fast-track the ladder of people coming on to the Red Zone because I dangled a little prize a month or so ago in the group chat and said whoever can fill out the most correct MLB postseason bracket gets to come on the week of the World Series and talk baseball. So ladies and gentlemen, with 50 points in our bracket, Kason Shingothi. Kason, how are you?
Oh, I'm just great. Thank you, Mr. Fornelli. Glad to be here.
We appreciate having you on. And now, I would be remiss to not say I did come in second. I had 45.
You did come in second, but you did not pick the Cleveland Guardians.
I had the Guardians. It was we had the Phillies and Cardinals were different.
And you had St. Louis.
I had St. Louis, and I'm kicking myself for that because I actually thought, like, before the season started, the Phillies would be good because I said they'd do well in that division.
See,
and then halfway through the season, they kind of fell off with me.
Yeah, the reason that I went with Philly in that series was solely because of Adam Wainwright. Adam Wainwright, if you look at his last four or five starts or so in the regular season, really started to struggle. His ERA, I think, by like September was a very low three, and then at the end of the season was a very high three.
So your logic behind picking the Phillies over the Cardinals was picking a pitcher who didn't play in the series. Gotcha. And I'm just a salty Cardinals fan.
Yeah,
right,
you are
now
a very salty Cardinals fan.
Yeah,
Mr.
but
I'm
all on this Phillies train. This is
no, me too.
To
they're
for
a great team. I knew all year that they were going to be an all or nothing team. They are a Thunder team. They have Thunder in their bats. They are a home run hitting,
you know,
team.
Don't disrespect their starting rotation though, because it's one of the most underrated and best strikeout starting rotations in baseball.
Aaron Nola has some of the best strikeout stuff I've seen since Kerry Wood. Period.
Love the Cubs reference. Yeah, I just need to get in there.
He manipulates the ball like I've never seen before.
Before we start with getting deep into baseball, can we really just give props to Philadelphia as a whole in general with the sports world? You have an undefeated Philadelphia Eagles team. The Phillies punched their ticket to the World Series. The 76ers, despite a 1-4 start, are always a lock for the playoffs at least. It's just a really good time to be a Philadelphia sports fan.
Absolutely.
If John Tortorella is your hockey coach, you probably
in the nicest way possible, they do not care about hockey right now in Philly.
They're actually
overperforming like the Blackhawks.
That's the sad thing about it.
Well, the thing is, and I think I mentioned this to you guys maybe last week or something, but it's funny that the World Series schedule lines up, and so the Thursday of next week that there's no game, it'll be the Texans and the Eagles playing. So it'll be Philly and Houston again, the day in between.
It was written in the stars before it even happened.
Yeah, so I saw a funny comment that, because a lot of people are saying Houston will be favored in this series, so they said it won't even get to that point, but you know, that's the one win Philly will get against the Texans.
Yeah, that's the one win. That's a Philly win against Houston.
Have the Phillies been favored at all in any of these series? No.
This Phillies run has been really fun to watch. It's a showcase of how they've overcome in so many areas of where they originally had flaws on their team. The bullpen is better, the defense is better, and they have all-around sluggers that are finally able to produce because they're healthy.
I mean, it's the Astros. Say what we will about the allegations and stuff years ago. I know I believe them, but since then they've made it back to the World Series twice, and they are a great team. But we've seen this movie twice before. A underperforming regular season high expectation NL team makes the playoffs, goes on a great run, I think specifically the Nationals, but also kind of the Braves, and then has to play the Astros in the World Series. And so far, the Astros are 0-2 and they have to play those hot NL teams, and the Phillies fit that mold.
I think my favorite thing to say during the postseason is the best team doesn't necessarily win. The hottest team in the postseason always
wins. And that
goes
for every sport, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Every single sport, the hottest team will win in the postseason.
Especially when you're playing every day, like in a series. Like exactly. I think football is the only one where it's, you know, in the postseason, the best team will more than likely win, more often than not.
But you don't.
Because it's less about trends.
Not even. It really ties down to a momentum thing, I think. If you're talking about from an NFL standpoint, the best team usually has that bye week, and they come out that second week, you see a lot of upsets.
Yeah,
that's
good. So momentum is a crucial piece, like Dane said, in any sport, especially in baseball. When you're hitting, you're hitting. When you're pitching, you're pitching. When your defense is on point, your defense is on point. And it's going to play a factor into this World Series.
It's the rest versus rust argument. And I think you have both sides of the argument. The Astros had they were the one seed in the AL, and then the Phillies were literally only in the playoffs because of the new playoff format. And I think we're also one step closer to a 16-team playoff format in the MLB, which I actually was looking at it, how it could play out. I kind of like it because I like the 1-8 seeding with a 3-game series instead of like the I hate 1-game wildcard series.
Yeah, no, they were always a problem because, I mean, think about the Brewers and Nationals game a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee should not have lost that game.
And if you're looking, you'll probably eliminate tiebreakers because there's no one's going to be tied for the eighth spot at a record of like, but you're most likely going to get teams with losing records starting to make the playoffs.
Well, that's what happened in the COVID year. We had the Brewers and I think maybe even the Astros were two teams that were just barely above 500 or just under. Yeah. And they made the postseason. And I think just looking at this Astros pitching, it's going to be tough for Philly to try to keep this hitting going. And they are the hottest bats in baseball right now.
So, but here's the thing with that. Justin Verlander is getting game one, correct?
Yes, I believe so.
Justin Verlander's start is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be dominant or he is going to absolutely stink up the joint because he is a historically bad postseason pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
His first start in the postseason against Seattle, horrendous. I believe he only made one start in the ALCS.
He's 1-0 in the postseason, so that must have been the one win was what you're talking about.
The win was the ALCS appearance against the Yankees. Six innings, one run, 11 punch-outs. Very, very good. But that was also against a Yankees team that went absolutely stone cold for
that whole series.
They were almost stone cold in
Cleveland.
Yeah, as well.
They got very lucky against Tristan McKenzie. They got very lucky against Tristan McKenzie.
And then also, too, with this Astros team, if you look at the way their team is put together, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's funny, too, if you look at pitchers historically, it seems like the guys that are the postseason heroes for pitchers are usually pretty mediocre regular season pitchers.
They always are. Your
Tim Lincecums. He does have two Cy Youngs. He had just had a short career. But Madison Bumgarner is kind of an underwhelming guy that's just been an absolute renaissance in the postseason. But if you look at the way the Astros are built, too, it's not their pitching that I'm most scared of. Their bats are so deep at every position, and I think
except catcher. Catcher's always been shaky for them.
That's the story of the MLB right now. But you got Real Muto, who is the best hitting catcher in the MLB, probably. So
I'd say it's either Real Muto or Kirk are the best hitting catchers in the MLB.
Give Kirk more time for him to become a DH.
First half of the season, Wilson Contreras. Not the second half.
Second half, Wilson, I think, hit under 200.
First half of the season. All-star Wilson.
We'll quickly be switching the narrative to Adley Rutschman because that kid is
hot. There are very rarely switch hitting catching prospects that come up that have more success than Adley Rutschman does.
Mm-hmm.
He looks like the modern catcher. He is a perfectly modern catcher.
The funny thing, too, with baseball is they had, like, this 5 or 6 year dry spell with catchers.
Yeah.
And then you're seeing your Henry Davises go first overall.
That guy's going to be insane.
And that's not even mentioning the most recent number one prospect in baseball, Francisco Alvarez. And then who's the kid that the Blue Jays have, too? Because they have a top three catching prospect.
Yeah.
He came up and played a little bit, too.
For a few weeks.
Well, whoever it may be,
the Twins, I think, right for that deal with Berrios.
Yes.
Well, I'm sure Kaysen will think of it because he's an encyclopedia of baseball, and then in the middle of pick six, he'll just shout it out.
I'll just shout it out. Jordan Groshans.
Was that a short?
No, that's a shortstop, and they drafted him.
Jordan Groshans is a shortstop?
He is a shortstop. And they traded him too.
Oh, he was in the he was the guy that they traded to the Twins. That's
yes. Right.
This is off topic with the World Series, but I have a baseball question I wanted to bring up during this segment before we run out of time. I want to hear your guys' opinion on this. Who had more of a disappointing season and exit, the Dodgers or the Yankees?
Oh, wow.
So that's a really good one. So I'll make a few points with this. The first one, we'll look at the Yankees first. The Yankees had ample opportunity to improve what I believe at the trade deadline was one of the weakest overall bullpens in the league. They had nobody going into the ALCS. Chapman was a no-show, and I don't know what's going to happen with him in this offseason because he's a free agent and nobody wants a guy with a bad attitude, especially since his arm's starting to die a little bit.
Yeah, you could put up with it when he was still throwing 105.
Yeah. They should have gotten David Bednar from the Pirates. I think that was but he did end up getting hurt, so that was a good move that the Pirates didn't trade him because he did get hurt. But they went out and got Lou Trevino from the A's.
Washed.
Who was having an absolutely abysmal season up until that point. Don't get me started on how bad the Frankie Montas trade played out for them. Mm-hmm. He was terrible.
And during the regular season, the Jordan Montgomery trade looked terrible, but actually ended up being a pretty good deal getting Harrison Bader for the postseason.
Yeah, he was one of the only ones that actually could hit in that last couple of games in Houston.
He was leading. He led the postseason in home runs. The postseason home run leader was eliminated. And who would have thought Harrison Bader, who is really
as a Yankee too? If you would have said something before this season, you would have thought, oh, as a Cardinal, you know.
Especially against us, he was a Cub killer in his career.
Happens all too often.
He's going to be a good little player for the Yankees.
He's a very solid player. He's an elite center fielder, elite speed, elite glove. the bat is finally starting to come around a little bit. He's hitting for more power. I think he actually fits very well into that Yankee lineup.
100%. And he's always had power in the minors. He just never could really string together a healthy season
right.
in St. Louis. But for me, I'm going to go – you said the Yankees are Dodgers?
Yeah.
Give me the Dodgers. I know they could probably scapegoat Walker Buehler. But you pick up the NL MVP. You have, what, was it like three NL MVPs on your roster?
Yeah, Bellinger and Freeman and Kershaw.
And Betts.
No, and Mookie Betts.
Well, Kershaw won an MVP too, so that's four.
Yeah, so that's four.
So you have four MVPs on your roster. And my early season MVP pick was Trey Turner, who is probably my favorite player in baseball, to
He's
be honest with you.
He's unbelievable.
If you look at, like, the Yankees had their holes. The Dodgers legitimately had zero holes.
They had zero reason to lose that series other than they simply got beat by Josh Hader, who out of nowhere started throwing 100 miles an hour. The guy had never thrown harder until the postseason, which was insane.
Well, I'm a Josh Hader believer, so I that doesn't strike me as weird or off-putting because his stuff is nasty. But
you know he throws two-seam fastballs?
I do. I did know that.
It's just crazy to me that the Padres went out and got him because
I know.
They really bought in. And, you know, you go
For
and get
reason.
You go. I mean, I understand.
Yeah,
but you go
absolutely.
And get Soto. You go and get Hader. You're obviously without Fernando, but where do the Padres sit? I mean, you have to first consider if they're going to re-sign Juan Soto. Mm-hmm.
But I want to hear Demos' take too, because Demos has had probably his best takes today that I've heard.
But you know, I think I'm gonna go with the Dodgers as well, because you can't waste precious time like this, especially with the talent that you have on your team. You can't get times like this back. Who knows how they're gonna perform? Who knows what their team's gonna look like next season? So you have a very good team like you do right now, and you're in the playoffs. You're expected to win. You need to win series to be able to go to the World Series and win some championships, and they just weren't able to do that.
I agree with all that.
I fear the Padres are in the same situation they were after 2015, because if you remember after 2015, they had Kimbrel, they had Matt Kemp, they had Justin Upton, I think. They were loaded in 2015, and they fizzled after the deadline. They were better this season, but they've got a lot of –
They still have work to do.
They have a ton of work to do.
I'm going to go with – and I know this is against what you guys said, but I think I'm going to go with the Yankees. And I completely agree with all the Dodgers reasons you guys said. But it literally, to me, comes down to the fact that the Dodgers won once. And the Yankees have not. And
what,
they're,
that,
and they're
that
little,
Mickey Mouse?
Well,
if
we're going to call Freeman an MVP that year, we're going to call them the champs that year.
That's exactly. different. It's
Is it though?
They won. Well, all I'm saying is they won in their window, and you know they won the pennant a couple more times than that. They won in their window so far. More than that is insurance runs.
There was no season affected more by COVID, in my opinion,
than baseball.
Yeah,
exactly.
And which makes it like I think basketball. Say what you will about the LA Lakers one. I think that's legit. How does this affect LeBron's legacy? I think that one was legit.
Football got a full season.
I would argue that basketball was almost less legit because I think the only reason why the Lakers won was because you got the best player currently. I almost said the best player ever, but you know I don't agree with that. The best player currently got 2 months off, and then he got just playing basketball with no fans. Obviously, the best player in the league is going to reign supreme.
You know, we can argue about this all day, but I'm feeling some pick six. I don't know about you.
I think it's time to change the segment before we get too involved in COVID basketball during our World Series segment, but Phillies and Astros kicking off tomorrow. First pitch, I believe, is going to be around 7-ish, like always with the World Series from Houston. We'll be right back with pick six. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to The Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WCMD.
Has everyone made their picks yet for NFL? Out there in the listening world, I hope not, because we have our picks, and whatever we say, it would probably be best if you faded them.
If whatever I say,
yeah,
I think I'm
David,
I'm
you have to go
for,
with,
like, the past
you gotta
five
go
weeks.
With, and I think David almost surrendered the throne last week for a day. And on Thursday, he was joined on the throne by Steve for one day because Steve and him tied after Thursday night because David lost and Dave won. David lost and Steve won. I said, Dave, who's Dave?
he's listening.
It's a combination of David and Steve's name. That's what it was. But David in first right now, 25-16, batting .610 on the season when it comes to red zone picks. Steve Cease, 24-17. The guest, after a nice week last week by my cousin Tom Fornelli, 24-17 as well. Dane, 22-19. And me, finally, almost back to .500, 20-21. 488, which if this was baseball, I would be like the greatest player ever. Yep. So that's how I'm looking at it. but we're going to talk about some pick six this week. And I think let's start with the guy who exercised for reportedly hours on the flight to London, the Broncos and the Jaguars.
Broncos country, let's rock.
Thank you, Russ. And here we have the Jags and the Broncos. It's technically a Jags home game, and I think if I remember from years past, the Jags have a pretty good following in London, don't they? Something like that?
They have a pretty good gambling following with the Lunder, but your cousin had a great tweet about Russell Wilson saying that if you've never worked with the Russell Wilson, you are the Russell Wilson of your work. Wow, that game is going to be a brutal watch. Yeah. It was delegated.
Well, good thing it's at like 8:30 in the morning. So
and delegated to ESPN Plus. It's not even on television.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't see that.
Yes.
Oh my god!
I don't trust Mr. Unlimited to do anything. So
But for I'm going to start us off. This might be a hot take though too, because I think Russ plays. I'm going to go Denver here.
I don't think you're wrong at all on that, Dane. Because I'm going to join you on that train. I'm going to go Denver, and I'm going to go Denver big. Because I think that different London air, and especially doing those high knees for 4 hours on the plane to London, has finally woken up Russ. Russ is going to cook. I'm going to be like Lee Corso. Give me that Denver Bronco head. Go Broncos.
If he even plays.
So he's going to play. He said he was going to play. Russell Wilson is not a Russell Westbrook situation. He's not in his late years.
Ooh,
he's not a bad player. He is still one of the most elite quarterbacks in the league. I've got faith that he is joining this new offense, this new team, and he's going to win. It's just taking a little bit of time. I've got faith in Russell Wilson that the Broncos will win.
No, it's over.
You've got faith in Russell Westbrook. That's it.
Man, I hate to be on the Lonely Island because Steve said the Broncos too, but I already made my picks, and I always make my picks before the show, and I don't let you guys sway me.
Stand on them.
So I'm going to go with the Jags. I think Doug Peterson, one of the most winning coaches in Jaguars history, is going to lead him to a win here in London in front of basically a home crowd. I think the Broncos are in disarray. I think kind of what we talked about with the Patriots about how you don't even know what direction the offense is going because they don't really have a quarterback right now. I think
biggest quarterback controversy we've had in years is New England.
If you have two guys, you don't have a guy.
Exactly. And if you don't have a guy, then the offense cannot operate. So I'm going to go with the Jags.
So I'm going to keep it real simple. I'm going to stay with the Broncos for a second. The defense is not the problem. They have one of the better defenses. They have one of the better defenses in the league this year. They just got to get the offense figured out, and I think Russ will do that.
Let's take a look. Leaving London, flying all the way over to the U.S.
Wait, let me do some high knees real quick.
Yeah.
All right, let's go. I'm ready.
I did it.
Flying home from London, and as Dane works out in the plane, we're going to head right to AT&T Stadium for the Bears and the Cowboys.
Oh boy,
I almost want to stay on it and be like, I think Russell Wilson was definitely eating Subway while doing those high knees, too.
Yeah.
He was eating the Dangerous, Mr. Unlimited.
The Danger Witch.
We could talk about Russell Wilson all day for some reason, even though he's not even a starter anymore. But let's talk about the Bears and the Cowboys. That's what we're really here for. And most of our listeners are Bears fans, so they're going to be happy to hear that I'm staying with what's hot, as I always do. Give me the Bears. Do it. David, tell me you agree.
So, I'm sorry.
I love that Demos actually takes this very, very seriously.
Well, that's why he's winning and I'm losing.
I love my Bears, but I've always called myself a realistic Bears fan. And I know the Bears because they do this to me every year. They win a game that they're not supposed to win. Next week they come out and they just act like they've never played football before. Mm-hmm. So I think that this Micah Parsons-led defense for the Cowboys is going to absolutely obliterate this offense of the Bears. And I'm just going to be real. I'm going with the Cowboys. I'm sorry. I love you, Chicago Bears, but I don't think you have enough to beat the Cowboys.
There's a reason Mr. Moses is in first place.
Yeah.
There's a reason.
I have to agree with David Moses on this one.
Cowboys?
I'm going Cowboys. I'm going Cowboys big for two reasons.
All this is setting it up for me to jump up the scoreboard.
Yeah, I know.
Steve, Cowboys.
I will say, Micah Parsons looks like the next Ray Lewis. The guy is unbelievably talented. Jumped to the moon. And I really do think that he leads the top three defense in the National Football League in the Dallas, how about them Cowboys? So how about them Cowboys?
Two very completely different players, but let's transition from high knees to hip swivels. Give me Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. I really want to pick the Bears at some point this year, but this just isn't the game. I think the Cowboys might have they might have the best defense in the NFL, which is kind of a hot take, but I'm just going to roll with them.
Mega shout out to my friend Nate, who's a Jags fan, who texted me, "Thank you for being the only one who believes in the Jags." Nate, I got you. I think the Jags are going to take that one. I think the Bears are going to take that one, and that's two games up on you guys on the scoreboard.
Wow. Okay.
Niners and Rams.
What did Steve take?
Steve went with the Cowboys. I said that one mid-segment. Oh, so you're calling me out finally. Called me out enough.
Cowboys. Yeah.
Niners and Rams.
If Blake Bortles was starting for the Jaguars,
the boat.
Bortles.
I know.
All right, I'm going to go with the Rams on this one. And Steve also said the Rams. So I'm going to represent both Steve and I when I say I think this Rams team still has enough to beat teams that they should be beating. And I think the Niners are that team. I think even with C-Mac, that offense still cannot be any solid under Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Rams on this one. The Rams were upset in their last matchup against the 49ers. And, you know, the 49ers just got Christian McCaffrey. They're still trying to work out iron out the kinks with that. I don't think they're going to be ready for a championship team like the Rams. Other than, you know, let's just be real, Rams haven't played like they just won a championship. But I think that they'll win this Sunday.
So I think the 49ers trading for Christian McCaffrey has created a unique ripple effect. You have Deebo Samuel, who's one of the most electric and versatile players in the league, who just lost his running back job to Christian McCaffrey. So now Deebo is going to become a full-time receiver unless they want to slot him in with CMC every now and again. But he's not going to get as many carries as he used to without CMC there. So for that reason, I have to take the Los Angeles Rams. I think that Aaron Donald is going to have another great game, but let's be honest here. There are a lot of really uncertain things going on with the San Francisco 49ers, and I think Christian McCaffrey is going to create a ripple effect in that offense that nobody's thought about yet. So give me Rams big.
I see the smile on Dane's face, so I know Lonely Island is coming.
I love being the only one to take a home favorite that just added Christian McCaffrey, got Trent Williams back from injury. George Kittle is playing like his old self. The 49ers might be one of my favorite super bets to play right now because they have probably one of the best rosters in the NFC. And I'm going to roll with the Niners here, and I'm going to sit on my Lonely Island. And I'm really going to enjoy taking that win from you guys.
You know, I agree with you. I think that once they got that trade for Christian McCaffrey, their odds changed. I mean, in the beginning of the season, we talked about how their odds changed when they had Jimmy Garoppolo as their QB1 instead of Trey Lance.
Right.
They changed a little bit there. But when you pick up one of probably top five running back in the league, it changes drastically, and they're going to, you know, contend, you know, for a championship run.
I hate the Packers. I do.
I do too.
We can agree on that. A little transition into the Sunday Night Football Packers and Bills. But I hate the Packers and I don't like Aaron Rodgers. But every streak has to come to an end, and it's not this week. It'll be against the Lions next week. Bills in this one.
So here's the thing, because the Packers have burned me so much, I know that I'm taking the Bills here, and the Packers about to take this dub.
Fading yourself, I see it.
I'm purposely taking the Bills so the Packers could disappoint me and win. Give me the Bills.
I love how you're purposely taking the Bills to lose.
No. I'm taking the Bills to win so that
he's
the
covering
Packers
his track,
win.
So he's not upset either
so
way.
So that the Packers win. No matter the outcome, I'm going to make sure I get a point for this in the pick six because you guys have no idea what I just said. Give me the Bills to win so that the Packers win.
We'll sort it out.
You want Buffalo, right? I got it right in the sheet for official.
Right in the sheet that I'm taking the Bills to win.
Okay.
But the Packers are going to win.
All right.
So you can go.
You picked. Go ahead, you pick.
I got Bills, I think, big. Stephon Diggs is unbelievable. I think we officially can say that he is a top five receiver in the league.
Three.
Yeah. Josh Allen is probably going to win MVP this year.
Definitely is.
Jalen Hurts is going to give him a run for his money.
David Moses, who has been maybe our biggest Bills fan of the booth so far, biggest Josh Allen supporter, what do you say?
It's from week one. Like, I don't know. I watched that entire game on the train home, and Josh Allen was on demon time. Like, He's been on demon time all season. I'm going with the Bills. I don't know what happened. What's been going on with the Lackers? The Packers.
but this was true.
The Bills have been one of the hottest teams in the league this year, and I'm I'm not going to hop off that bandwagon.
All right, two-minute drill, two games to go. That was a Buffalo sweep. Steve had the Bills as well. Let's take a look at Monday Night Football, the battle for Ohio, Cincinnati, and Cleveland.
I'll lead us off with this one. Give me the Bengals, even with Ja'Marr Chase being placed on IR for 4 to 6 weeks. I think Joey B is figuring it out. I think the Bengals are going to be a fun team to watch down the stretch. Give me the Bengals.
I'm going to keep it short and simple. I'm going to take the Bengals as well for the same reasons you just said.
Ditto.
Yeah, I got to go Bengals here. Joe Burrow threw for almost 500 yards last game. Even without Ja'Marr Chase, he's good for at least 300. I can't bet against Joey Ice.
Another sweep. So we have, so far through five games, we have I was alone twice, Dane was alone, and now we have two sweeps. So not too much scoreboard room to come. But now finally, Thursday night football in Tampa Bay. The Ravens, the Buccaneers, the Bucs coming off maybe Brady's most disappointing loss of his career, at least of the last couple years.
I'm going to go with Flock Nation. I think the Buccaneers have plenty of time to figure out what's going on offense. This week will not be the week. I'm taking the Ravens.
It's past Brady's bedtime. Give me the Ravens. With some emphasis.
He did a motion and everything for those of you who are...
You got the good hand in there. I got to go with Baltimore here. Lamar Jackson is Lamar Jackson. I got to be honest, going into the season without Hollywood Brown, I was a little concerned about who he was going to pick as his permanent target. He has gone with using his tight end attack, and I really find that I truly believe that Lamar Jackson is going to figure out a more permanent scheme to take care of him. Their defense is solid. They're all around a very solid team. I wouldn't say the Ravens are amazing, but I would not call them bad. So, go Ravens.
Steve went with the Ravens. Do we even have to say what I'm going to say? Thomas, Edward, Patrick, Brady, Jr., primetime. Is there a better day to turn it around than today?
This is why Mikey is at towards the bottom.
I bet the live under on him how many times he said that. And the
last couple weeks, because it's just been embarrassing for their Bucks. So
that's why I took the under 0.5 and I lost money today. So that's awesome.
There you go, Dane.
Let's wrap up the show.
Yep, that's it for this edition of The Red Zone. Thank you to Casey Chingothi for joining us today. David Moses, Dane Dreyfus, and myself, Mikey Frinelli. Go Bucks, go Bears. You've been listening to The Red Zone.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.